I'm Paige, the host of Reverie True Crime. I tell stories of helpless victims, vicious killers, predators watching their prey before they strike, survivors, petty crimes, people we think we know who do the unthinkable, and the dangers that lurk not only in the dead of night, but in plain sight in the light of day. Every once in a while, I'll also tell stories of the frightening paranormal, elusive cryptids, haunted locations, and conspiracies that may be silly or thought-provoking. You can listen to Reverie True Crime wherever you're listening to this podcast.
Darkcast Network, the light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
Hey everyone, it's Kona here. Now, I told you that our break was going to be short and we'd be back in January, and we are. This is, in fact, the first Wednesday of January, but we do not have our season premiere episode yet. What I have instead is a little something special. We kind of announced this in our bonus episode that we did in December for Michael Vaughn, but we've actually recently joined the Darkcast Network, and so you saw a new little intro promo thingy at the beginning of this episode for that. But what that means is that we are joining a lot of excellent podcasts, you know, indie podcasts, true crime, kind of paranormal, all sorts of stuff. It's really been a lot of fun for me to kind of get to know these podcasters and their shows. So one of the shows on the network is called Over the Fence. Over the Fence is hosted by Cody and Molly, and they talk true crime in the most normal place in the world, over the fence. Over their backyard fence, to be specific. So they were inspired to create this podcast to share their mutual fascination with all things true crime, ghostly, and just creepy in general. And this week, we are doing a feed drop of one of their episodes. This episode covers the unsolved disappearance of Eileen Michelhoff. On January 30th of 1989, Eileen Michelhoff went missing while walking home from middle school in Dublin, California. It wasn't until her mom arrived to pick her up from ice skating practice later that evening when they figured out she was missing. She was third in a spree of kidnapping cases that at the time were thought to be connected, but as the years have gone on, it kind of appears that they were unrelated. Although the clues and facts are very limited in this cold case, they go over the events of that day that Eileen went missing and some past and present people of interest in the case. So this is really great. I love this episode. It very much fits with our theme. So I know you may be a little bit disappointed that we don't have a new episode, but you will love this show and you'll love this episode. And it's another unsolved missing persons case. So please listen, please enjoy. We do have a few things happening on Patreon. We did just release a new episode of Ethan's podcast, Unplugged from the Darkness, that went up on Tuesday, January 4th. And we are going to release a special Patreon bonus episode of a solved missing persons case. So that's going to come up there this week as well. But next week is when season 3 of And Then They Were Gone is going to premiere. So thank you for your patience. Thank you for listening. And please enjoy Over the Fence.
Hi, this is Molly.
And Cody. Please join us as we talk true crime.
Over the Fence. Yeah, boy, do I have a story to tell you guys.
Some hot, hot tea.
I have a dog. She's a little one-year-old lab mix. And every morning, my husband takes her for a morning run. Thanks to COVID, my husband's home all the time, so he can do that for me. And as he was running one morning, he was going down the street, and out of nowhere, these two big dogs ran up on him and started attacking our dog. Luckily, she wasn't hurt very badly. She had some minor scrapes and abrasions. But while this was happening, the owner was like down the street, and the owner like comes running up like, and he
yells at Matt and like, don't run.
Which just gets me, because if he's saying don't run, I get it. I get it. Like, they always say don't run from wild animals.
Right.
Like in the forest, whatever. Because I always go to the forest, apparently. But don't run.
I was going to say, or like if you see a lion. When the hell am I ever going to see a lion?
But if you ever see a lion in person, don't run.
Don't run.
But what gets me is that, like, he says don't run.
Right.
It's like, somebody has run before.
Yeah, and something maybe bad happened.
And you know what happens when someone runs. Yeah. Okay, carry on.
But here's just a PSA for dog owners out there. Just have your dog on a leash. Like, just put him on a leash. It's not that difficult. But yeah, they weren't on a leash and he comes running up. And luckily the dogs had no interest in my husband, just our dog, which, I mean, they were not, they're big dogs, like, you know, and they definitely could have hurt my husband too. So he runs up and of course my husband's like, yeah, your dogs just attacked my dogs. Like, give me, and my husband didn't have his phone on him, you know, whole nother story. But he's like, I'm going to give you my phone number, thinking this guy's going to actually like call my husband and try to make good on it. The guy had no interest in doing that.
Well, I just love that your husband has so much belief in humanity.
I know. Really? Right? I know. So of course nothing comes of it. Well, this is a person that also is known around our neighborhood a little bit. He's actually had run-ins with people. People have posted on boards about him and his dogs that have been loose. And so we were easily able to find out where he lived, because we ended up taking our dog to the vet because we didn't know if these dogs were like vaccinated or like what was going on. She did have abrasions and, you know, cuts from them biting at her, nipping at her. So it was a few $100 vet bill for getting our dog checked out. She needed to put on some medications just in case. And so my husband's like, well, I'm not going to pay for this. The guy should pay for it. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. He should. So we were able to find out where this guy lived. So we put in a report into animal control. Long story short, a few weeks go by, and when we get the report, we're reading through it, and we're like, oh, okay, this guy is not a nice human being. Like, people have called out the dogs at least six other times.
And for attacking, right?
For attacking or something like that. They don't really say. And then also just the way he reacted to when he was contacted about the incident. Like, he, like, screamed at the officer, and it was just not a pretty. So in the end, we were like, you know what? It's a couple $100. Like, just forget it. We don't want anything to do with it. Well, over the weekend, my husband gets a text from his friend, and he's like, hey, did you see what happened today in town? And my husband's like, no. And he sends him the article and says, man stabbed to death this morning. And it's a picture of the house where the guy lived. And so my husband's like, what? So he fact checking it and goes back to our report to see, because it just doesn't say the guy's name yet. And he's 37-year-old man, blah, blah, blah. Fact checks our report. He was 37 years old. So we're like, I think the guy got murdered. So the guy that just a few months ago that had his dog that attacked my husband and his dogs was murdered this weekend.
Sent this to me, I was like, oh, wow, true crime, murder in our town, which doesn't happen often.
No,
obviously,
no.
True crime in every town, but murder. So that really caught my attention. But then you said, this is the house of the guy whose dogs attacked my dog.
Yeah.
And I was like,
yeah.
What?
So the guy that my husband conversed with was murdered over the weekend. We're like 90% positive the same guy. I guess there were some photos put up at his house like a few days later, and like we saw the pictures, and they're older pictures, but it looks pretty much like him. But yeah, it was just really crazy. My husband's like, that is a very odd very odd coincidence. I mean, plus murders in our town don't happen that often,
right?
I mean,
and then someone like that you had come in contact with.
Yeah, it was just weird. So yeah, just kind of a weird little like true crime story in our town.
Bizarre.
It was just bizarre.
Someone has been arrested for this.
Yeah. So yeah, pretty crazy. I'm kind of interested to see what comes of it. I want to see like more. I'm just kind of curious to like why. But
wow,
yeah, just a crazy little true crime story here in our town today. Cody's gonna be telling us a story.
We've covered Amber Schwartz. That was episode number 2.
Yes,
we talked about the recent action on the Michaela Garrett case.
Yes.
And if you didn't catch that action, it was at the beginning of our Bloody Benders episode, which was our holiday episode.
Our holiday
nice family wholesome story. Mm-hmm. And we talked about how in the cold case of Michaela Garrett, which I mentioned in the Amber Schwartz episode, there was one of the multiple girls that had gone missing at the time. They have made an arrest in that case. And we're going to tell Michaela's story. We just want it to unfold more so that we can have all of the information after this guy goes to trial and is hopefully convicted.
Yeah.
So we also talked about another girl in the Amber Schwartz episode, and that was Eileen Mishaloff.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She went missing at the same time as these other girls, just a couple months after Michaela, and same situation in the Bay Area. And this one is still unsolved.
Okay.
It's not just us talking about it. It's actually Dublin Police Department, too.
Okay.
She goes missing in the city of Dublin, and they have opened the case, and they're taking another look at the cold case file.
And this is going on right now.
Right now.
Good.
So why are they taking a fresh look at the case? Well, you could guess it. It's because of the action in the Michaela's case. I guess that over the years, anytime there's any kind of development in local cases, they will see if there's a match, if there's a fit.
Do you think they're seeing to see, you're saying a match to the Michaela case, they're looking, opening hers up, or just like in general, they're opening it up? You know,
no,
what I'm
they're
saying?
Opening it because there has been movement in the Michaela case, and because Michaela was a similar case to Eileen's, they're going to take a look to see
if her murderer matches up with
exactly.
The case.
Okay, he could also be responsible for that one.
Right. Okay.
And for the investigators on this case, this is a labor of love, because I'm sure that they have done this so many times.
I'm sure.
And every time they open it up hoping this is going to be the match.
Yeah.
Because they want to find out what happened to Eileen. The city of Dublin wants to find out what happened to Eileen. Personally, I know women that grew up in the area at that time that Eileen went missing. And I mean, I was in the Bay Area at the time, and I remember it, but these people lived in towns very nearby, and it rocked them, and it stayed with them. And even if they had no relation to Eileen, they just are still very much affected by it, and everyone wants to know what happened to Eileen Mishaloff. This was not a typical Dublin crime. For those of you that don't know, Dublin is a town located in Northern California in the Bay Area, and I was poking around the City of Dublin website just trying to find some good words to describe Dublin. I mean, I know Dublin from my vantage point growing up in the Bay Area, but I didn't grow up in Dublin, and I wanted to represent it well because I really want everyone to see the kind of community that Eileen disappeared from. Dublin was quaint and was actually was an unincorporated village until it incorporated in 1982.
A village?
I guess it was called a village.
What? What?
That's what it's described as the website. Cite the City of Dublin website, not myself. Go tell them that they're wrong, because that's what it said. An unincorporated village.
Until 1982?
1982. When they incorporated, they had a population of about 15,000 in their town, which is, I feel like it's a large village.
I'm like, I mean, when I think village, I think a couple hundred people.
Maybe, yeah. But now it's grown to a town of about 65,000 people, making it the second fastest growing city in California. Although the population doesn't make it a huge city by any means, it acts as a hub for law enforcement in the area, with the Alameda County Jail, which is where David Mish is currently spending time, or the one that's charged with Michaela Garrick's disappearance. And it also has a federal prison nearby the county jail, and it also houses the Alameda County Sheriff's Office Training Center and Camp Parks, which is a training facility for reserves for the U.S. Armed Forces.
Oh, wow.
Why am I saying all of this? Well, it's the type of town that you feel like is well covered by cops.
Well, you feel very safe living
and
there
cop
with all that.
Families.
Yeah. There's probably a lot of cops that live in Dublin.
And it's a place you would want to raise a family.
Yeah.
And that is exactly correct. And it totally is still.
Yeah.
This is a central place to live. It's not far from Silicon Valley if you're going to make the commute. And it's not far from San Francisco if you're going to commute there. This is a central place that you want to live, and an amazing community still to raise your family in.
Yeah, it's a nice town.
But this goes to show that no town is untouchable. And this sense of security was definitely brought into question in January of 1989. We're actually approaching the 32nd anniversary of Eileen's disappearance. It happens in a couple of weeks. On January 30th, 1989, 13-year-old Eileen Mishaloff was dropped off at Wells Middle School by her father. She left early that day because she didn't have to take PE at school because she was heavily into ice skating, and the PE requirement was waived because of her regular ice skating practices and training. So she would leave school and walk to her house and then get changed for ice skating practice and be picked up by her coach to take a lesson at Dublin Iceland, which is an ice skating rink in the area. She lived about 2 miles from school. Her mom actually wanted her to take the bus home that day, but Eileen, you know, kids.
Oh, yeah.
We always want to walk.
Yeah, of course.
We want to walk
Especially
home.
If you have friends with you and stuff, you know, you just want to do your own thing.
Eileen never called her mom when she got home. And her mom thought maybe she went straight to the ice rink. Sometimes this happened. And at that point, Eileen's dad would drop her ice skating gear off at the rink, and Eileen would go directly there instead of going home first. Eileen spent between 20 and 40 hours a week at the ice skating rink, depending on the season.
That's a lot. That's some dedication.
It's like a gymnastics training.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Eileen, she loved ice skating. She started skating at the age of 4, and then she took it to the competitive level, which has required so many hours of training, which is why she got to waive PE and leave early.
Yes, makes sense.
But Eileen never did make it home that day, which is why the call never came into her mom. And her coaches never picked her up. Her coach had arrived at her house at 4 p.m. to pick her up as usual, but her twin brother was home and told her coach that she wasn't home yet. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until her mom came to pick her up at the rink at 6:30 that she found out that she was never picked up and that she never made it to the ice skating rink.
So wouldn't if someone have been like, where is she? She missed her lesson. Let's call the mom and see. Or they just thought she was skipping it. Like, that seems a little weird.
It could have been that when the coach was there and then goes to the ice skating rink, and maybe he figured, you know, at some point, like, maybe I miscommunicated. Maybe I missed that she had an appointment or
and
something.
And it's not as easy, like, it's not cell phones, you know what I mean? It's not like you can easily text or call someone.
Right, and say the coach goes to pick her up and goes, oh, she must already be at the rink, but then gets to the rink and is, like, caught up in classes and then just doesn't think about it.
Right.
But then her mom shows up to the rink and realizes that Eileen has never made it there, and a coach did not pick her up. Inside her room, nothing was moved from that morning. She had all of her ice skating medals, her desk, her bed, everything was in prime condition from that morning. And what is also there is the bag that she would have picked up after school to take to the ice skating rink.
Oh.
Inside it were two pairs of custom skates that she used, boot blades and rags to clean the blades, and a water bottle for practice.
And so, yeah. So she never arrived there.
Never got there and definitely wasn't going to the rink with that. Eileen had been seen walking down Amador Valley Boulevard near Village Parkway that afternoon, but she was not seen after that. Her key fob was found sometime later near the entrance to a park in the area called John Mape Park, which was along the route that she walked home. She would go through a wide alley behind the shopping center that I mentioned and a store called Sawmill and a furniture store. She would then cross a major boulevard and then go through John Mape Park along a dry creek bed. It was a shortcut a lot of kids took.
Okay.
When she was last seen, she was wearing a charcoal gray Esprit pullover sweater, a pink and charcoal gray skirt with horizontal stripes, and black Keds sneakers. She used a dark blue backpack and was also carrying a flute case.
Hmm.
So just
normal
girl walking.
Normal. Walking from home. It was like, sounds like the 80s. Yeah. I mean,
Eileen was 5'3" tall. She had brown curly hair, brown eyes, and also had braces. It was noted in several reports that she had freckles on the bridge of her nose, which I just think is the sweetest thing. But it's in so many reports, and I just think it's so cute. My niece has a lot of freckles, and I love them.
Yeah.
They're so endearing.
Yeah.
And it was also noted that she had a lump on the inside of her left ankle. So from this description, we have a clear picture of what Eileen looked like when she went missing.
Yeah, I mean, that's very detailed.
And, you know, sometimes we have people that have gone missing, and we're like, ah, she was, like, wearing something and something, and it was just so general, but this was so specific, even down to brands,
right,
and the items that she was carrying. The backpack that she had been carrying was found soon after she went missing in the dry creek bed at John Mape Park, but it wasn't found when the area was originally searched.
Oh.
So they don't know if it was overlooked at first, but investigators think that someone placed it there after the park was searched originally.
Yeah, I feel like you would have seen that.
And this is very similar to what happened with Amber Schwartz, where they had the search and then a sock appeared.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then it wasn't there before.
Yeah, I mean, a backpack's a pretty big thing. Like, I mean, possibly they could have. I don't think you could overlook something like that. Especially they were probably doing a thorough search. You know?
And it's on a creek bed. You're going to notice a backpack.
Yeah, yeah.
They swear by it that it was not there the first time.
Right, of course.
There were tips given that she was last seen on San Ramon Road, the boulevard that she had to cross over, and it was getting into a van. There's also a tip that she was seen getting into a white sedan outside of the park where her key fob was later found. Well, dogs from Contra Costa County Search and Rescue Team, which I'm pretty sure it's the same dogs that were searching for Amber and Michaela, they tracked Eileen from her middle school to behind the shopping center. And there the scent ends. So people don't know if it was a vehicle pickup at that point. What they've released to the press, Dublin PD doesn't really go with that theory because of where her key fob was found.
Yeah.
And also she was seen crossing the boulevard. And I don't know where, I think that the shopping center would be before the boulevard.
The key fob couldn't have been placed. That was in the original search, right?
Yes. Okay. The key fob, and it was found pretty quickly after she went missing.
Okay. Hmm.
Or after they found she was missing.
Right.
So they don't really vibe with that theory.
Right. Okay.
But that's where the dogs tracked her to, is behind the shopping center.
That's interesting.
And that's what we as the public know.
Okay.
And of course, in an open cold case, we are not going to know much at all, right, because they have to keep things real tight, mm-hmm, in case they're able to get somebody. But we have theories.
Okay. I like some theories.
We have people of interest.
Oh, we do.
Lots of people
Lots of people?
Several people. Interesting. Some of them you'll know.
From previous cases, possibly?
Yes.
Yay.
So the first person is Tommy Lynn Sells. Tommy Lynn Sells is originally from Oakland, and he was apparently in the Bay Area at the time of Eileen's disappearance. Tommy Lynn Sells was a serial killer across the U.S. He was a transient killer, which is why he was really hard to nail down. And he claimed responsibility for over 70 murders across the U.S.
70?
That hasn't been proven, but it's what he claimed.
He says.
He confessed to have killed a girl by the Berkeley BART station in 1989. So they were like, oh, he was in Berkeley at the time, and that's not too far off from Dublin. He was known to stay in Oakland. However, he stated that he wasn't involved in the case, and he never admitted to being in or around Dublin at that time. And he's been pretty open about the murders that he's committed, so they kind of defunct that one. And he was executed in Texas in 2014, to put everyone at ease about his whereabouts.
I mean, he was in Berkeley and stayed in Oakland. I mean, it's close, but it's still not that close. Like, if he went to Dublin, it would be like, well, why would he go there? Like, you know what I mean? Berkeley and Oakland kind of make more sense than it would be for him to come over to Dublin.
Right. Geographically.
Geographically, yeah. It would just be an odd spot for him to, like, come on over to.
I mean, and BART didn't run to Dublin at that time.
No, I don't think so.
And BART is Bay Area Rapid Transit, which we've talked about. It connects kind of all the towns, like a above ground subway.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't have had the easy access to get to Dublin from Berkeley.
Yeah, so it doesn't
like
really
you do
make
now.
Sense.
So that was the first one. It's defunct. Phil and Nancy Garrido, who kidnapped J.C. Dugard from South Lake Tahoe.
I was like, why do I know that name?
Yep. They held her captive in their home for 18 years in Antioch, California, where she birthed two daughters while being held captive. Phil Garrido was out on parole in 1988 after being charged with sexual assault of a young girl and serving 11 years of a jail sentence. So he was out on parole when Eileen Mishaloff went missing. Mm-hmm. And I believe they thought that his car matched one of the descriptions that a tip came in. But again, there's multiple tips being coming on how she disappeared. When JC was found at the home of Phil and his wife, Nancy, they thoroughly searched the property for any sign of Eileen, and at that time, Michaela Garrett. And that was, again, one of the time that it got opened again. Okay, let's take a look at this. This is similar.
That would make sense.
So they thoroughly searched the property for any evidence of Eileen. No evidence was found. They did find remains, but they found it to be animal bones. So then we have our old villain from episode 2.
Oh gosh, is it who I think it is?
Timothy Bender.
Oh, Bender. Bender and his love van.
Yes. So let's again turn back the clock to episode 2, where I discussed this person of interest thoroughly in relation to the Amber Swartz case. However,
and let me just say, if you haven't listened to episode 2, please go back to understand about Bender, because he is a gem. I mean, and not in the gem and in a positive light.
he's just all kinds of special.
He's just, there's so many weird questions about that guy.
Yes.
Continue on. Sorry.
So Curtis Dean Anderson confessed to Amber's kidnapping and her murder. And now with Michaela Garrett, we have someone else charged with that murder. And Amanda Nikki Campbell, he sued her hometown police department for defamation of character. And he's never been proven to be responsible for her disappearance. Mm-hmm. But he did come up with Eileen Mishaloff because of his really, really weird behavior at the time and his offer to help the families of missing girls.
Yeah.
And on February 11th, 1989, he had joined in searching for Eileen. Again, no evidence against this man, just his mind games and his really bizarre antics.
Yeah, he's weird.
For Eileen's, I went back and revisited that book, Stalemate, that I had read in regards to that case and Tim Bender. And in this journal that he kept, he had talked about going up to the Eileen's search. And he found these areas like this rural road that went off of a canyon. And he said, you know what, that would be a good spot and someone would be protected back there and be able to do whatever they wanted. So let me go search up there. But he knew that he was heavily being looked at for these cases because of his weird behavior.
Yeah.
So he goes up to this one area. And as he comes down from this rural road, an FBI agent is waiting for him. And they have all these questions. He got scared away at that point. He admittedly so. He said, I got scared away.
Yeah.
He realized that he can't keep inserting himself this into these way.
Cases.
No, without yeah. and try to have like a normal life at yeah. this point, because you're always going to be under speculation right. to keep inserting yourself.
And Bender did that more than once, where he was like, wouldn't this be a good place for this to happen?
Yes, he you did know, that with I mean, Amber. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how involved he was with
Michaela.
I remember
with the Amber case.
But he did that. Show up
at
Michaela's mm-hmm. To Michaela's mom and offer to help mm-hmm. there. The police briefly went down this road, but they weren't interested in him really. But they had to verify that of he course. Was where he needed to be mm-hmm. at the time. And where he was working, they said that he did clock in and out of work that day. I guess during the day, he could go from housing project to housing project mm-hmm. doing whatever maintenance he was doing, but they're not looking at him.
Okay.
They were not interested in him.
Got it.
They're over him.
We're done with you, Bender.
Now,
why does he do these things?
It's exactly. So weird. And it was almost like in Eileen, you see him be like, okay, like.
Like he finally got it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, this is weird. Like, it took you that long, dude?
Yeah. And I think that there was more things after that. But at that point, he really disengaged from mm-hmm. the Eileen Mishaloff case. But he was then again still. Well, anyways, we're going down a rabbit hole. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole. So the last person I'm going to mention, the last two people, they were a pair. James DeVaggio has been considered as a possible suspect in Eileen's case. He and his former girlfriend, Michelle Lynn Michaud, were charged with the 1997 abduction, rape, and murder of Vanessa Simpson in Pleasanton, California, okay. which is the town next to yeah. Dublin. They held her in their minivan that had been turned into a torture chamber. They tortured her like on the way to the Sierra Nevada mountains where mm-hmm. she's ultimately found. They were also charged with additional counts of sexual assault in unrelated cases in the mid-1990s. And in 2002, Michaud and DeVaggio were convicted of Sampson's murder and sentenced to death. And they're awaiting execution.
Wow. Okay.
And the reason I'm bringing up all these people of interest is not necessarily because I think I can solve the crime or right. the perpetrator is within what I've said, mm-hmm. but just the shocking amount of possible persons of interest because of the activity in the area at the time.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if you took a look at current times, there's going to be similar criminal activity. But when it's put under a microscope for a specific amount of time and area, it's pretty appalling.
Yeah. Like that's. I mean, all of them are very reasonable people to be persons of interest.
And all of these people, aside from Timothy Bittner, yeah. who's not committed a crime at this point.
And at this point, I don't know if he ever really did. I think he was just a weird dude.
Yeah. So, but all those other people have
committed horrific,
terrible,
things. Yeah,
terrible crimes. Mm-hmm. And all within a very small, proximate area during mm-hmm. a small amount of time.
Yeah.
After Eileen's disappearance, people started driving their kids to school. They were not wanting to have mm-hmm. anyone walk. What I'm looking at here is dated April 19th, 1989. So this is a couple of months after Eileen has gone missing.
Right.
I'm going to show Molly here. This is kind of like a PSA that goes out
okay.
to help children stay safe.
Okay.
Just take a look. Let's read some of the things that we have. What kind of tips do we have here?
Walk home from school with others.
Okay.
Avoid lonely places. And do not take shortcuts. Let your parents know your route home. That seems reasonable. Don't give your address on the telephone or tell anyone you're home alone. Okay, got it. Don't wear clothing with your name embroidered on it.
I think that's still a rule that they have. All of these rules still apply.
Well, I know like there's kids, some kids have like backpacks, you know, or they'll like some kids. And I've always heard like, don't embroider your kids' names on your backpacks because it's not safe. If someone tries to touch you, scream as loudly as you can. Run away and tell your parents immediately. And never accept rides from strangers, even if they claim to be friends of your family. So, I mean, all pretty valid, like.
And they all hold up today.
Yeah.
But I mm-hmm. wonder, was this like the OG stranger danger flyer?
I think so.
I found that and I was like, what in the world? Guaranteed that came out at our school too. Guaranteed we got that.
I'm sure.
But I can list all those rules if someone said, tell me all the rules.
I mean, they all apply today.
Like, I have taught my kids all of those.
Yeah.
Except if telephone, I would insert internet.
Yeah, right. That's very true.
Because my kids don't know how to talk on a phone.
Don't give your address out on the internet or tell anyone on the internet that you're home alone.
Insert internet after everything at once. Don't accept rides on the internet.
Yeah.
Actually, right. There's like a whole thing that you do accept rides from strangers on the internet and it's called Uber.
It's very odd. It's very strange.
But it's all okay.
We get inside strangers' cars all the time via Uber.
So I want to get back to Eileen. Again, we're approaching her 32nd anniversary on mm-hmm. January 30th of this year. Every year, they do a walk. They started the first year and they've continued on with the walks. Her room remains unchanged.
Really?
Just as I had described it previously, with her medals hanging mm-hmm. and her bag there ready for ice skating practice, her parents haven't really gone in there after her disappearance.
Never left the house either, or moved.
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm. They would leave a light on outside for her every night in case she came home. However, this year, for the 32nd anniversary walk, her mother will not be joining because her mother, Maddie Mishaloff, she passed away from cancer in April of 2020. And I just, and my heart hurts that she died without ever knowing what happened to her daughter.
That's horrible.
She always held on to the hope that Eileen would still be alive. Mm-hmm. And she said, how do you give up on your child?
Well, you can't when you don't have any closure.
Right.
Know, and they had any answers.
Exactly. And because of cases like J.C. Dugard, where she did come back 18 years later.
Yeah.
But Eileen would be 45 by now.
Yeah. It'd be kind of hard if she was still.
And I think that right now, Maddie is finally with her daughter, Eileen, and that she does know everything. And I'd hate to leave it on such a somber note, but that's where we are with it.
Yeah.
And I think that bringing more attention to the case and the annual walk and just to keep her name out there, hopefully we can get some traction and get something moved.
Moving. So was there any recent updates of anything from the police at all? Like any, have they released any new? Because, you know, sometimes as the years go on, they might say like, hey, they might release a little snippet of something new. Or
I've shared everything that I came across. And
like, I'm kind of surprised they haven't released maybe a little something more if they do have something more, you know, because like I said, I've noticed that in cases throughout the years, police will start to release a little more just so they can maybe drudge up some more.
To jog someone's memory or give another piece of the puzzle that they know, but that the public doesn't
know. That's what I'm trying
to say. And I could be missing it, but I went through anything I can find on this. And
I think you would have found it if there was.
And I didn't. What I gave today was I compiled everything that I found. And again, we don't have access to that case file. I would love it. I'd love access to that case file to help put it out there. Volunteer Cody on the case.
We can be the next, oh my gosh, what's her name?
Nancy Drew?
No, not Nancy Drew. You could be the next Michelle McNamara.
That would be legit.
Have your own HBO documentary, Solving a Crime. Well, I'm glad that you brought this case to light. I think, you know, I think it kind of just wraps it all in like kind of a nice little bow with your Amber Schwartz case and then Michaela Garrett case that just like happened and now the Eileen case. Because that was, they were all mentioned in your Amber Schwartz case. So it's really interesting to like kind of see it all kind of unfold in a way. You know?
I'm really interested to see how the Michaela Garrett case unfolds. And just to see, I really hope we have some traction on this one.
Yeah.
But here is another, I'm sorry to leave you with another unsolved child case, but unfortunately, these are not few and far between.
There's so many. Yeah.
For pictures of Eileen and her ice skating attire and her sweet freckles, look at our Instagram page at overthefence_podcast.
And if you guys could please go to any place you listen to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. I don't think you can rate us on Spotify, but on Apple Podcasts, you can leave us a rating and a little review. I love reading the reviews. I really love it. So unless you guys leave mean ones and don't do it.
And please join us next time as we talk more true crime
over the fence.